Hey, Laura.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
God, I took my video blur me to look better thing off, and I gotta put that back on. That's driving me crazy. Hang on.
Are you talking about? You blur the video to make you look better? I don't even know what that is.
Choose video filter. So,
Okay. No filter.
video. Okay, so watch this. If I say touch up my appearance, I'm gonna touch it up. Look at that.
Fascinating. Oh
That's some
my God.
crazy stuff, right?
That is some crazy stuff. How do I do that?
Okay, so to you should have okay, depending on yours.
What is going on? There we go. So I have heard from a few people. They're not going to be available summer.
Okay.
It may be the two of us. We'll see what happens. Others haven't informed me, but sometimes they just don't show. It looks like Michelle will be here. Let me
All
add
right.
her. All right, she's joining shortly. So one thing that I thought I could offer today for those that are interested, it won't take long, is just a little bit of orientation and training around how to manage up and across. And you guys may have seen those videos, but if you haven't, or if it's been a while, I'd be glad to kind of walk through the way that I think about managing up and across and why that is. So if you guys want a little bit of training, I'm happy to do some of that on this call. We can either start there, or if you guys have things you want to talk about, we can start there. So when there's not many people on the call, I'd like to do a little bit of training if people want to use the time that way. So.
Okay, so that sounds good. And it may fit what I'm going through. And Michelle, you speak up about your stuff as well. I almost feel like I need a therapy session today because I feel like what I'm experiencing in the company that I work for is honestly a lot of gaslighting, for lack of a better word. And I've been experiencing that for 2.5 years now, and I'm about ready to look elsewhere. Because it has this persona of being this like, oh, we're all family, and it is a family corporation. It's not
It's
a
family
large,
owned.
yes. And so that has a certain flavor. It's gone from something small for years and years and years to this big thing, big, being relative, big being like 500 people. And the communication is crap. And so it's making me a little crazy, and I don't even know where to tackle that. So first of all, and before I get into that, Michelle, what's on your plate today?
I'm fine. I actually will learn from yours because, anyways, I'll just learn from what you need to review, or Shane having his manage up and across type question, because I always can take from that. So,
Great. Sounds good. All right. Well, you want to get started then?
sure. So yeah, how do you deal with this in the sense that I was hired to be groomed to be a manager. That did not happen. And I did get promoted to basically be somebody to take over for an existing manager. So I guess I'm like a manager in training or whatever. My frustration is I was a CFO before coming here. I never should have stepped down. So never, never, never make anything less than a lateral move. But I don't like not having a job. And taking something that had the great potential to me was worth it. Like, oh, cool. I was going to be managing like 50 people. Great. I can do this. I want to do this. And then when that didn't happen, I find myself in this culture of mediocrity, for lack of a better word. Like there's no innovation or hustle, and there's not good communication. So anyway, I'm in this position now, and the person I was hired to assist is not giving up anything. And I come to find out that they were basically demoted 6 months ago. They had huge reach and power. And now they have very little. And the person that they referred me to train with, because, you know, I'm with the same company, but it's a totally different department, different position. That person does this really weird, you ask a question, they don't answer it directly. You ask for a meeting with them, they'll schedule it, and then they'll reschedule it or cancel it. Like, it's just, it's like pulling teeth. And so I finally found out from somebody else here, don't ever go to that person, because you'll just end up more confused than when you started. And so anyway, I did a little bit of searching on corporate gaslighting. And from what I've read, like, it's nothing personal, obviously, like most things, it's not personal. It's nothing intentional. It's just the status quo is very good at protecting the status quo, and they don't like change. And they are not allowing, like, it's just like trying to get my toe in there to start creating change. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I'm not in a position of power. And yeah, I'm a little frustrated. I think I probably said this, some of this stuff last time, but
you did.
6 weeks in, I have not been able to meet with my boss yet. And have not even been clearly introduced as his successor in certain roles. Yeah, it, like, to a really crazy degree.
Yeah, I think this is stuff we've talked a bit about, and I'm happy to engage it more deeply. And I think probably a really good use of our time is for me to walk you through some of the training.
Okay.
And the reason for that is, it may sound a little generic to start, but the reality is, in any situation you find yourself in, there are only certain levers you control when you are trying to manage up and across. Mm-hmm. And if you put all those dials to 11 and you still don't see change, it ain't happening.
Okay.
And so that's a clarity for you, which is, I can't guarantee you that I can help you change it, but I know exactly which levers to push to give you the absolute best possible opportunity for change.
Okay.
And if it still doesn't change after that, then you're right. You need to start looking elsewhere, or you need to accept your life as it is, which was the same advice I gave Michelle almost a year ago now. So my advice to Michelle was, okay, she was trying to decide, should I leave or not? So we said, let me first do this piece of work with you. She did that piece of work, to her great credit. And then about 6 months ago, I said, okay, you've done everything you can. Now you get to decide. Do you want to accept where you are and take a paycheck, or do you want to go somewhere else? She said, I'm going to accept where I am, and my husband and I are going to start a new business, and I'll keep doing this, and I'll just live with the frustration, which is a valid choice. Mm-hmm. So does that sound like good use for you?
Yeah, it sounds great.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so there are, so just for a little bit of context, I'll tell a brief story of how I learned what I'm about to share with you. So when I was the pastor of a church of about 300, I had a boss named Brian. And when I say boss, in a church, in the context that I was in, the entire community is the boss. They are the boss, and I am there to serve them. I am serving at their pleasure. They then nominate representatives to represent them as the leadership team that is then my boss officially. So whatever complaints they have go to the leadership team, and the leadership team manages me. And so if I want to do something or change something or whatever, I need the leadership team's approval. And sometimes the leadership team will say, well, we need to go back to the congregation and ask their opinion. And other times they say, no, we're mostly empowered to make these decisions. We'll make it on behalf of the congregation. So that shows you how the power relationship was, which is, I have power in the sense that I'm on stage. I have power in the sense that I'm ordained. I have power in the sense that I have been given a mandate. But ultimately, the power really resides with them. Now, imagine for a moment what happens when your mother dies and you come to me and ask me to do the funeral. Suddenly, I have been projected onto me the power of a shaman. I now have power over that situation. Or let's say your daughter needs counseling, pastoral counseling, and you come to me and you need pastoral counseling. Now, suddenly I am a person of authority and power. And so you can see how there's these weird, like, who's actually in charge here and who has what authority to do what? And so people would come into my office and say, hey, I don't like how you're running worship. This is terrible. I've been at this church 30 years and I don't like the music and I don't like how short you preach and you need to do this and you need to do that. And I'm like, great, let's talk through that. And I go, it sounds like I'm like the guy who came in and repainted your kitchen that you've been living in for 30 years and you didn't ask for that color. Is that about right? They're like, yes, that's exactly how it feels. Thank you. Now you get it. Now stop. And I go, okay, great. Thank you. Unfortunately, I have the mandate from the leadership team to execute this. If you disagree with this, please meet with the leadership team and convince them otherwise, and they can come to me and manage me. I'm accountable to them first as a representative of you. I say, well, I don't like that because they're not going to listen to me. I said, I can understand that. I'd be happy to meet with you and them and support you in that conversation. I don't trust you. Okay, fair enough. You don't trust me. That's like, you know, so that's an example, right? So you can see how like weird little things. Well, one of the members of the leadership team, there was the chair of the leadership team, who's the ultimate boss, and then leadership team council. One of the members of the leadership team council had a ninth grade daughter who was in really bad shape with a boyfriend. And he and his wife came to meet with me and said, can you please help us with our daughter? And so I met with their daughter and sure enough, was able to help with the daughter. They're so grateful. Thanks for everything. So in that moment, I was empowered to serve them as a pastor. On another matter, he became the boss of me because he's the boss of the church. Now, in another situation, he was serving on the board of a denominational board. And what I was the pastor of the largest church in the denomination. And so I was now his boss because I am a representative member. And I paid the largest amount to that denomination. And so whatever decisions he's making, I get to influence. I get to say, I don't like that decision. I think we should go left, not right. And he would have to be respectful of that. So he made a decision to fire some, not just him personally, but he agreed with the decision the board made to fire somebody at the denominational level that I was depending on, that I desperately needed the support of. And so and they didn't consult me. And I was very upset with that. And so I said to him and to the chair of my board, I said, this is unacceptable, this way of operating. We need to have a denominational meeting. And I want to discuss it publicly and really hash it out together, which would be absolutely my right in any normal circumstance. So we scheduled the whole event. We were going to show up. And the chair of my board came to me and said, hey, Shane, glad we're doing this. We need to do this. You're not allowed to speak at that meeting. And I'm like, what do you mean I'm not allowed to speak at that meeting? They're like, well, if you go against Brian at that meeting publicly, he'll come back to you. That's going to undermine everything over here. And I'm like, but it shouldn't, because those are two different things. And I have the right to speak because I have power. So now I've got all these competing power lines that are like, how do I fly through this? And so I learned so much about power dynamics and how things actually work by flying through some of the most complex power lines. And then I'll tell you one other story. And I know this is taking a little time, but these stories hopefully are going to be helpful to you. Then I went to the megachurch, and there I was reporting to the chair of the leadership team there. The chair of that leadership team was a billionaire. This person is a well-known person who served in our government recently. And I had never worked for people who had been born billionaires. One of the things that I learned after this experience is that people who are born billionaires are not used to people disagreeing with them. And so I treated this leader board as I would the prior board member leader, because I was like, we had honest conversations about what I thought. He told me what he thought. We came to agreement or not agreement. And either way, he's my boss and I'll align. But it was absolutely my right to express my opinion to him. So this person began telling me, guiding me to do certain things. And I said, they wanted to make a change. And I said, I completely disagree with this change. I didn't say those words, but I was like, ah, this doesn't make sense, blah, blah, blah. And they said, okay, thanks for your input. Then a couple of other board members came in and they said, hey, offline, what do you think of this decision? I'm like, oh, I don't think it's a good decision. I think we should go this way, not that way. I've already discussed it with the person. I think this is going to take us in the wrong direction. They're like, well, we totally agree with you. Thanks for telling us. We'll get your back in the boardroom. I'm like, okay, cool. So I begin doing all this stuff. And next thing I know, we show up at the board meeting and everything goes sideways. And I don't know what happened. And then I talked to the chair afterwards. I'm like, hey, what's going on? They're like, you're now an interim pastor. We're going to put you in an interim position. We're going to go hire somebody else. So I was effectively being asked to leave. And I had no idea why. I'm like, what the heck happened? So I talked, and no one would tell me. And I talked to everybody. They're like, yeah, well, we don't know what happened. You know, just that was a decision that was made. Nobody knows. So I go talk to a really gifted executive coach and I tell him the story. And he goes, so what happened? And I tell him, he goes, oh, you're just being punished. I was like, what? I'm being punished? That's what you do to a child. What are you talking about? I'm not a child. You know, no, you're being punished. I'm like, I don't get that. They're like, oh, sorry, let me explain. Yeah, in systems, you're going to get punished if you invalidate the leader's perspective. So that's the first mistake you made, is you invalidated their perspective. And I was like, but it was asinine. The idea was terrible and it was going to be damaging. And in fact, it did damage. He's like, yeah, that's fine. But it was still not your right to invalidate. You have to validate their perspective. And I was like, oh, no, I did not validate at all. I thought it was the stupidest, most awful, asinine idea. And I didn't say it in those words, but my energy sure as heck conveyed that I knew way more than that person. And I did know more than that person. And by the way, I was right, you know, right? So I'm full of self-righteous indignation. So from those two experiences, and then now working with dozens of leaders across multiple organizations, I developed this three basic metaphors that I now understand are how we can operate when we don't have power and we need to speak truth to power. Before I go any further, I'm going to pause. Any questions, comments about those two stories?
That's just helpful to me because I, you know how like we relive things until we figure them out?
Yes.
You were just describing parts of my last job and parts of my new job. And it's just like, wow, this has been a bit of a like several year journey here. And it's sounding like something I need to figure out.
I'm so happy to hear that you resonate with that. Michelle, comments, questions from you?
No. I have to work on the validation thing. You already know that. Because I'm the one that says, yeah, no, that's a stupid idea.
Yep.
It's true.
And fail to do the, so I'm trying to remember to say, well, I hear what you're saying, but have you ever done what?
Yep. So let me walk you through the exact process. And by the way, everything I'm teaching you on this call, you will find in the bonus, How to Manage Up and Across. Those stories are not included in that, but the principles I'm about to unfold. And there's also a guidebook you can download. And I'm just walking through the elements of that. So feel free to take notes, but also know that all of this is available in the training. So now we're going to talk about what do I do then if that's the reality. So here's the first thing you need to know. I'm going to talk about three specific instances in which you are speaking truth to power, and they're different contexts, and I'm going to use a different metaphor to describe each context. The first context is when you need to tell a supervisor that they are not managing you well. So this is now, you are interpersonally demotivating me, not treating me right. I don't like this. Please don't do this. In that instance, the metaphor is a mirror. Your only role is a mirror. Now, here's what's important about a mirror. A mirror does two things. First, it simply reflects back an undistorted image. So you're not a funhouse mirror. You're a flat mirror, an undistorted reflection. And two, a non-judging reflection. The mirror has no opinion about whether your hair is parted to the right or the left, or your shirt is blue or pink. Nobody cares. The mirror has no opinion. You could have a disfigured face. You could have bird turds all over your face. The mirror makes no judgments. It merely reveals what is. So the more you, and so what's implied in that is, it's not to say that you can't speak about emotional impacts. You can speak very vividly about emotional impacts, but you do so from a dispassionate position, which means you are speaking from scars, not wounds. A scar is something that is healed, managed, dealt with. A wound is something that is actively bleeding. Even if you are not fully healed, you will do so with a nice big bandage wrapped around so there's no blood or mess. So you go to the leader and you will simply say to them, And this is, by the way, also in the hard conversations training, but it's very simple. When you do this, it has this effect on me. So let me tell you a quick story about how this happened for me. I left a company to go work for a guy who was starting a business when I was 28. And I later learned this person had an undiagnosed, he was later diagnosed with a pretty serious mental illness. And I didn't know it at the time. So he went on a business trip and I was tasked holding down the fort and I was managing things. And I had a friend who worked in a very large Fortune 50 company that would be an ideal client for this business. And that friend of mine, I reached out to and we talked and he said, you know what, I'd love to meet with this guy who you're working for because we could really potentially use this. So that guy was traveling around the country at that time. And I sent him an email and I said, hey, my friend, so-and-so, the VP of X and Y, he is wanting to meet with you. He'd be an ideal client. And he really, this would be one of the biggest clients that we've ever had. So I sent him an email. I said, is that something you'd be willing to do? And would you be able to send me some times at my work for you when you return so that you can meet with him? I got an email back from that leader. He said, Shane, don't ever, in all caps, ever speak to a potential client without consulting me first. The fact that you went behind my back and spoke to this person demonstrates that you are manipulative, arrogant, rude, and tone deaf to the actions and behaviors of others. We will discuss this when I return. Please immediately cease all contact with your friend. So I began to brush up my resume. Like, I'm getting out of here. That was whatever that was, this crazy town. And I was furious. I couldn't believe this. And so I thought long and hard about this. And I began to develop this perspective on how do I communicate to someone who's unhinged? And what do I need to be? And so I became the mirror. And so I said, okay, I'm going to be focused only on the facts. And here were the facts. He believes that I am manipulative, arrogant, rude, and tone deaf. These are four comments about my character and potentially intention or motive, which I can do nothing about. Even if he's right about these factors, I can't change them. I don't know what I have done, so I can't change them, you know? So I was like, that's the first problem. So I need to now tell him that those things are not helpful to me. Even if they're true, they're not helpful to me. Second, if your objective is changes in behavior, which is why you reached the conclusions you reached about me, I need to know which behaviors you would most like me to change. And it would help me even more if you told me the effect of those behaviors. So I knew I had, he came back into the office. He said, Shane, we need to meet. I need to sit down and talk to you. I said, no problem. Let me begin. You informed me that I was arrogant, tone deaf, rude, manipulative. Even if these things are true, these are unhelpful. I cannot change them. So the next time you speak to me, you will do so by addressing behaviors and their impact. I don't allow anybody to speak to me the way you did. Certainly not my friends, partners, not even a boss will I allow to speak to me the way that you did. So that doesn't mean you can't correct me. You certainly can, and I encourage you to do so. But here are the grounds under which you're going to correct me going forward, X, Y, and Z. Tell me the behaviors, tell me their impact, and I'll go about changing those behaviors. He burst into tears. He apologized profusely, told me how terrible he felt, couldn't believe it. He didn't know what came over him. And I then resigned. So I tell you that story because that was a really extreme version of what I've also had to do, which is to help my leader understand what motivates me, what doesn't motivate me. So that was the other big piece that I learned that I highly encourage you to consider when you feel you're not being managed well. That's the mirror.
Okay.
The second comments, questions about mirroring. I know that may not be active right now. The final one is the one that I think is going to be most active for you. But
yeah, I mean, that would have helped me in the last job, but I needed to leave. So it's a good thing I didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
This would have prolonged my suffering. And
well, the good news is you can still use it even when you're leaving. I used it when I left.
Because that's what we all fantasize about. Like, you get mad and you're just like, man, this is going in my exit interview. You know, when you feel like you don't have the power to change anything, it's just like, because honestly, I feel like I'm surrounded by idiots, and I know that's not the case, but I just feel like people are really out to lunch.
I think
I have this growing list of like, wow, you people are like just, you know, all these bad things I could say.
Yeah. So I would say a couple of things, and this goes from Michelle as well. There are certain personality types that when you start seeing clowns everywhere, that's an indicator of your distortion now, because that's the fastest way to invalidate everybody else. You know, and it was hard when I say that, I know how hard my comment just was, because when my coach said to me, oh, you invalidated her, I'm like, well, of course I did, because she's an idiot. It was asinine. It was the worst thing ever. And by the way, that person went on to publicly testify in front of Congress and another matter in government, and everybody panned that person like they're an idiot. So I'm like, there, the world agrees with me. The person's an idiot, right? So my point is he still challenged me and said, fine. Somewhere in there is a positive intention with a valid idea.
And yeah.
You agree with it, but it doesn't make it invalid. And I was like, oh, I hate you and this. Right. So
that makes sense. My brother said something similar. He was a COO for a corporation, and he said, don't assume, you know, malice or ill intent. When doofistry could explain it, basically.
Yeah. Doofistry.
And you're saying one step further, like not even necessarily doofistry, just different.
Yeah. Like, I have different trade-offs. I have different accountabilities. I have different experience. I have different objectives. I have different, even those things. A simple racy chart can often clear up that person's an idiot. And it becomes, oh, they're not an idiot. We just weren't singing from the same songbook. So there's lots of different ways to solve it. And so that's why my challenge to people who have like, I got it all right. I got it figured out. And all of you are idiots and nobody can see what I can see. I'm the pattern recognizer and you aren't. This kind of illusion that I'm above it all and I see the elephant and nobody else does is hugely problematic, because it locks you into a kind of overconfidence. And then it feeds the victim narrative. Not only am I the best at this, I'm also not being heard. So like the worst of the worst, right? It's one thing to be like, I don't quite know what I'm doing, so I understand why people aren't listening. But to be like, I know what needs to happen and you're not listening, that becomes really, it intensifies that story.
Yeah.
You just want to notice that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so let's talk about the next one. I'm going to go quick on this one because I don't think it's as big a deal for you guys. I think you're natural at this. The big thing is you're also a gauge. Okay, so a gauge is, I'm driving down the road, my car full of sensors. My car has all kinds of sensors that are telling me information, temperature of the road, the tire pressure in my tires, the gas gauge, the speed, the where my lanes are, how close I am to a lane. I'm alerted all the time by my heads up display and all the things, depending on what you drive. So I'm driving along and I get all these alerts and alarms, right? Well, I grew up in Minnesota and I got trained in how to drive on ice and snow. I now live in Arizona. So the few times a year that the surface temperature of the road drops below 32 degrees, my car alerts me and says, danger, warning, we're below 32 degrees. And I go, that's adorable, because I promise you, I don't need that alert. There's no snow. There's not a cloud in the sky. I know exactly how to drive on this road, and I can do it at whatever speed I feel like, because I'm a competent driver in these contexts. That same car, so I ignore that gauge. That same car tells me that I'm going too fast. I can ignore that. There's no cops around. I really need to get somewhere. There are the costs. Even if I get a ticket, I'm happy to pay for it because I really need to get somewhere. That same car tells me I have 8 miles left before I run out of gas. That one I pay attention to. I go, whoa, okay, I got to get some gas because then I'm going to be stuck. Three warnings, two of which I ignore, one of which I pay attention to. Why? Because I'm the driver. I know things, I see things that the car doesn't know and see. Not because the car is stupid, but because the car doesn't have access to the things that I know and see. Now, because I'm driving a car, and those are reliable gauges, I don't have to tell the car anything. I just ignore it. Like, I'm not going to pay attention to you. This is what leaders are being asked to do at all times. Employees are coming to them with 30 different alarm warnings. And every employee has their own little world, their own little story, which is like, I think about the road and the surface conditions of the road and the impact that this tire touching that road would have on the car. My job is to let you know it's too cold. It's too cold. It's too cold. Why aren't you listening? Slow down. It's too cold. Well, there's a reason they're not listening. It's not because they're idiots. It's because they see things differently than you. They have different experiences than you. They might have access to information you don't have access to. And so understanding that depersonalizes when you are the gauge and you're not listened to or mm-hmm. you're ignored. Fine. Your job is just that of a gauge. In that instance, you have a responsibility to continue sharing it. Like, hey, road conditions are this. They go, no problem. Don't worry about it. Okay, no problem. A week goes by, you go, hey, just letting you know, road conditions are still this. We're like, yep, we know. We appreciate it. Okay, just want to let you know. You know, if I'm in your shoes, I want to know this information. You make whatever decisions you need to make as a result of it, but this is the hard data. Boss goes, I don't like hearing that data. I certainly understand that wouldn't be fun to hear, but that is the data. Whatever you need to decide is fine, but this is the my job. If I'm in your shoes, I want to make sure that in my role, I'm giving you the data. It's your job to do what you want with that data. I have recommendations. My data says slow down. The road is too cold. You want to keep going fast? That's okay. There's no judgment applied to the gauge either. The gauge doesn't have judgment of me, just like the mirror doesn't. So mirror is simply reflecting back how you're feeling. That's more interpersonal. The gauge is conveying data, and you are a sensor that your job is to give data to the driver. And so sometimes what happens is people go, they get incensed, and they get more angry, and they get more animated, and they get more pushy and aggressive. Other people start colluding against the leader. And they start going, oh, fine, you don't want to listen to me? Fine, then I'm just not going to tell you the road conditions. See if you like that. I'm just going to sit back and let you guys crash into that wall because you're not listening to me. Gauges don't do that. Gauges don't take it personally if they're ignored. They just simply reflect. And even a gauge could say, would you like me to keep warning you about this? So I'll pause there.
Okay. So I don't know where I am with this, but basically there's not really any avenues in my organization for communicating to management. So, or to HR or like, and when you do, depending on the manager, I'd say HR across the board is just like, well, it depends. Okay. So it depends on the person you're communicating to. Some of them are like, wow, that's good info. You know, thanks for sharing that. They're receptive to it. And then others, this is where the gaslighting comes in, or what I'm calling gaslighting. Others are like, that's weird. You're the first person to ever raise that or say that or whatever. And I'm not even complaining necessarily. I'm just like trying to give them like, here's what I see from my perspective.
Great.
And so I tend to just shut up at that point.
Yeah. Like, so that would be
I'm not great being engaged.
Yeah. So that would be great.
I don't know that I do either one of those.
Yeah. So it sounds like what you do is the first thing I would say is you said there's no avenue. That is common in organizations. Unlike gauges, all that means is there's no wire connecting to this wire that turns on the light, right? Yeah, Where's the wire to turn on the light? I sense the road. I can't seem to communicate with the driver. Great. So that's another feedback piece. That's another gauge, which is the wiring is messed up in your car. And I'm going to alert that. Something stopped communicating and I want to sound that alarm. That is a different gauge. So that's a fair one to simply say, hey, I've got a series of things here. It is not clear to me what the escalation method is. Can you tell me what the escalation method is? Can we form an agreement around how I'm to be expected to relay things that are working or not working, or just data, just neutral data? And if they say to you, well, we've never had that before, you go, hey, I could be wrong or it may not be relevant. And I might even be an outlier. So feel free to take that data however you see fit. And if you're an outlier and they go, yeah, you're an outlier, sorry, we're going to ignore that, then you just go, fine, I'm an outlier, big deal. It's up to you to make those decisions, not me. If that's fundamentally material to your happiness and your work, then you probably want to look elsewhere because they've told you, we're not going to address that. Your input is not interesting to us, so we're not going to address it. Fine. If it's immaterial to you, then you're like, great, no problem. I was just being a gauge. And then you can even negotiate. You can say, literally, the same way that my car will side, like, do you want to dismiss this warning? Yes, dismiss it. Please don't remind me. I already know it's 32. You can dismiss it for the rest of this drive. Awesome. Next time you start the car, I'm going to reset that. Okay, no problem. Same thing here. You go, look, it's 32 degrees. It's below 32 degrees. And they go, got it. And you come back, you go, it's still below 32 degrees. They're like, yeah, we heard you. Yeah, but you're not changing the temperature or the speed. We're not going to. Okay, great. Let me know whether you want me to keep informing you of this data point. Is this data useful to you? No, it's not. We already got it. Okay, cool. Then I'm not going to continue bringing the data, but we have an agreement to do that. I'm not colluding against you. I'm not giving up and going, well, fine, you don't want to hear it. Just forget it. I'm literally forming agreements. Agreements are, what can I expect of you? What can you expect of me? Now let's honor that. And so my job is to negotiate that agreement. And that literally means we are going to be snipping that cord and that data no longer comes to us. Great. Because you got 35 alarms and you want 34 instead of 35. I can respect that. I get that. You got 35 other people telling you this stuff and you clearly know of the 35, there are only five that matter. And okay. Mine isn't one of those five. That's not personal. That's just okay. Reality. Okay. So that's how to begin thinking of yourself as a gauge. We got a mirror, we got a gauge.
Yeah, I like it because I tend to make blanket assumptions. Like if I, you know, my boss acts this way, my old boss acts this way, like, oh, that's so odd. Nobody else has said that, or I didn't even know you felt that way. Well, yeah, you did. You just forgot that I've already mentioned this.
Sure.
And then I kind of assume that the organization, like everybody in the organization is that way, because I've gotten that from a couple people. Like I look at one data point, but not the other.
Yeah. And it's entirely possible that your assessment is right. I'm not even telling you that you're not being gaslighted or that they're up to no, they might be absolute terrible human beings who should not be
trusted. They are. That's what's been driving me crazy is like, they're nice people who
I'm just letting you know, even if that's the case, like it was clear that person that I was reporting to in the second church was genuinely, I believe, not a very good person. And I also believe grossly incompetent and quite dangerous.
Yeah.
And I don't think others agree with me. Yeah. And that's fair, right? I still had a responsibility to show up on my side of the table in a very specific way that I didn't show up as. And guess what? I got punished.
Okay. All right. Okay. Luckily, that's not my current boss. Thank God.
No, right. Okay. Yeah, I don't think that's your current boss either. So you got those three. But what's valid and relevant about these two that I've just said, that both the mirror and the gauge, is as long as the person is saying yes, I want you to be a mirror, and yes, I want you to be a gauge, then you are accountable for continuing to provide that. If they say, I don't want to hear from you about any of this, then you say, fair enough. I am relieved of my responsibility to serve in that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty simple. All you're trying to get are explicit agreements.
Okay.
And then once you have those explicit agreements, it's always a good idea to write them in an email and verify them. So you go, my agreement, thanks for the conversation, just following up with an email. This is my understanding of our agreement. Do you have the same understanding of this agreement? If I don't hear from you, I will assume the answer is yes. Now you have a nice paper trail that you can always go back to and say, when they're upset with you, you can say, hey, we had a conversation. I documented it in this email. I never heard back from you. I told you in the email, if I didn't hear back, that I would proceed as if this were the agreement. Or you could say the other way, which is this agreement is only valid if you respond and confirm. You know, either way is fine. Doesn't matter. Depends on what you're trying to agree to. So that's just, again, the practice of leading and managing up. Now you have a third metaphor. third metaphor is, so if the first one is about interpersonal, you're being not good to me, as you're being a bad manager to me. I'm unmotivated. I'm not treated well. That's mirror. Gauge is, there's information and data that you need. I don't even know if it's important information, but I'm getting lots of information and you need it. The third one is when you know, and this applied to the second story for me, it's when you know that the person's about to make a bad decision or is headed in the direction of a bad decision or has already made a bad decision and you want to correct that bad decision. This is when you are a signpost or a guidepost. A guidepost is very simple. When I drive my car up to a road, there is a guidepost. It has a post and it has signs and arrows. One arrow says this way to California. The other arrow says this way to Nebraska. I now know if I choose to go left, I'm going to California. If I choose to go right, I'm going to Nebraska. Whatever, right? There is a choice and there is a consequence. That consequence is neither good nor bad. It is merely a consequence. If they're saying, my goodness, no, I never want to go to California. I hate California. Then guess what? That becomes a bad consequence. But they're the ones who decide if it's bad, not you, not me. I'm just a guidepost. I don't judge you if a car goes to California or a car goes to Nebraska. What do I care? What I absolutely need to do, though, is I would never want to indicate that going right leads you to Nebraska or whatever, left, right? I want to make sure that I'm clear about which choice leads to which consequence. In California, you have mountains and an ocean and all these exciting things and Hollywood. You also have incredibly high taxes and you have lots of traffic and you have, great, so California's full of that. Nebraska, low taxes, low traffic, low cost of living, no mountains, nothing very interesting, a lot of Midwest people. Choice is yours. Which is better, which is worse? Who knows? Depends on what you want. That is the metaphor that you want operating in you when somebody is about to make a bad decision. Why is that? Because fundamentally, it validates the choice, whatever choice they're making. You might hate California, think it's the worst place on the planet, but you got to at least be able to admit mountains are pretty and so is the ocean. If you can admit that mountains are pretty and so is the ocean, even though everything else is terrible and crime is bad and parking sucks and the traffic is awful, and you at least can see why they might want to go to California. And that's the trick to building your credibility, is to say, I want you to know that I see why that choice might be really beneficial and smart for you. Let's also acknowledge there are some downsides. You may already see them, but I'm going to name them. And then let's talk about this other place, Nebraska. Nebraska does not have mountains. I'll admit that. It also doesn't have an ocean. There's not going to be a lot of, and so, you know, those things are missing. But I want you to see that there's also really low cost of living. There's no parking problems and there's no traffic. Your choice, whatever you, if you want to go to California or Nebraska, I will enact it. I'll execute it either way fully. But my recommendation is we go to Nebraska. Okay. And the reason I think we should go to Nebraska is because we need to move fast. Nebraska's closer. And once we get there, there's no traffic. So we can go a lot faster. And I believe that because you stated your most important thing is speed. And I think Nebraska's going to get us there faster. However, I acknowledge there's no ocean and there's no mountains. And so that's my recommendation. But whichever you decide, I'm happy to support. I'll enact either way. Even if you're like, oh my gosh, I hate California and I hate traffic and I don't want to go to California, you still say, I'll enact it either way. Now, if they say, we're going to California, and you go, California may as well slit my throat, then you can say to them, hey, look, one other data point that may be relevant for you or may not be relevant for you is, if we go to California, I won't be able to continue on after I've executed. So once we move there, I'm going to get on a plane and fly to Nebraska, right? And I just want you to know that. I'm not trying to change your decision or influence it. I want you to be aware of that. If I were in your shoes, I'd at least want to know that. And again, I support the decision and we'll execute the decision as you've required, right? So My encouragement to you, though, would be don't even admit that until you get to California. Because you may get to California and go, you know what? It's not so bad. And these oceans are pretty sweet. And I do like the mountains. And you know what? I don't have to, after all, turns out California was better than Nebraska. Even though I think, by all accounts, Nebraska would have been better. I'm wrong. California is better. And so you would wait until you get to California. And then you would say, I'm living in California. I want to slit my throat. I don't care about mountains. And the ocean is cold and dirty. So I don't want any part of any of this. Then you say, hey, I'm really glad I got you to California. I was happy to do it. I really wanted it to work. I wanted to make it work. I want you to be aware I can't do it. And they might go, whoa, 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 whoa. You're the most important player in the system. If you can't do it in California, we're going to go to Nebraska. So that's the sequence. How most people do it is they go like what I did. They go, California, that's the worst idea. California is awful. There's nothing but traffic and it's awful parking issues and the cost of living is outrageous and there's pollution and there's crime and there's nothing good about California. It's a terrible, terrible place. Nebraska, big open skies and no parking. I do all the positives over here and all the negatives over here. And I go, why would anybody on God's green earth ever think about going to California? Stupidest idea ever. Let's go to Nebraska.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I did things in my last job.
Yeah.
And what will happen,
every single time, what happens is this is not a credible person to listen to.
Okay.
Because you can only see one perspective.
Okay.
And any leader worth their salt must be able to see many perspectives, many pathways, many choices. All of them have a valid way, and all of them come with risk. And we're all going to hold our hands and accept the risk and keep moving. So hopefully that gives you like a little bit of way of thinking. Now, I can walk through the details of that, of how to do that. But the biggest first step is, one, inhabit the shoes of your leader as best you can. Acknowledge that they see things you may not be able to see. Acknowledge that they are making trade-offs that you're not having to make. And so while from your vantage point, which is limited, you can't see that as a good choice. For example, you might say, well, we're going to lose a bunch of staff. And they might go, yeah, but you don't get it. It's so easy to hire. I got 30 new people that want a job tomorrow. I can hire them right now. So if we lose people, fine. I'm going to hire a whole new group. Okay, well, that's a fair point. I didn't know we could hire new people. I was so focused on not losing anyone. You're going to lose people. And I said, yeah, I know we are. I've counted that cost. And I know exactly how to offset it. And I'm going to do that. You go, okay, well, fair enough. Then I don't need to have this argument anymore, right? So the first step is inhabit your boss and just acknowledge there's worlds you can't see and you've acknowledged that. Second, become emotionally detached from the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
That is an energetic reality that if you don't bring to that conversation, you will not be heard as credible. Because anytime you communicate up through power, there is a filter, and that filter forks the message in two. The filter forces two different messages to come through the filter. One is, I'm listening. The boss is going, that seems important for me to hear. And the other is, what's the hidden agenda of this person? Are they lazy? Are they afraid? Are they selfish? What's really going on? Are they protecting their territory? I don't really know. I can't tell. So I want to be suspicious when somebody comes to me. The only way you de-escalate suspicion is if you come in and you say, any of the choices are valid and I'll execute whatever you need me to execute. If you're up for a conversation, let me walk you through what I'm seeing.
I love it.
So that's how you do this. And even if you feel so strongly that you know you can't live with that other decision, you still don't make that admissible, because if you admit that, you're now losing credibility again. And I would say you don't know if you can't live with that until you get to California. So follow them to California, execute the best you can. And then when you get there, live with it for a little bit and go, oh my gosh, this is insane. I can't do this. Then you have that conversation with them, and then you're even more credible. Because you said, yeah, I made my recommendation. I believed Nebraska was better. I absolutely executed. Would you agree that I executed California? Didn't have any complaints. We got here safe. We got here on time. I did the thing we said we were going to do. I want to have an honest conversation about how I'm experiencing California. And I just, you know, again, I'm not trying to influence your decision. I just want you to have information. That's also a great way to negotiate a greater pay in your job. If you go out and you get interviewed and you find somebody who's going to willing to pay you 20 grand more, you just go, hey, look, if I were in your shoes, I'd want you to know this. I'm not here trying to tell you you need to change anything. I just want you to be aware of information. And the information is that I'm being offered $20,000 more over here. It is material for me, and I'd be lying to you if I told you I wasn't considering it. I'm not asking you to change anything. I certainly understand you have your limitations, and I want to do that respectfully. I want to be open about that conversation, but I am going to be considering that, and so wanted you to have that information. 9 times out of 10, they're going to go, oh, okay, hold on. Let me go back and just see what I can do. And let me see what, thank you for telling me. I really needed to know that. And they'll come back with that. I can do 15 and plus time off. And does that work? Yeah, that works. Or no, you know, it really needs to be at least that, you know, it's just a way more gentle negotiation. When you're saying, I'm not attached to whatever outcome you have. You are now a credible, independent observer of a system, and you will be invited increasingly into the smoke-filled rooms because they know, this person, I can trust. They don't play games with me. They see many options. They see clearly. They see me as valid. They validate me. People who validate me, I trust even more. Even when they really disagree with me, they can still validate me. I trust them even more. You're not just a whiner throwing stones. Not only that, if they disagree with me, they align publicly. And that's the other thing, the last step. So remove yourself from the outcomes, present neutral choices and consequences. Every choice has a consequence. That's the signpost, neutral. Present them both. Present the downside. Present the upside. Make your recommendation. It's okay to have a strong recommendation. You don't have to be neutral. You can absolutely say, I strongly recommend Nebraska. I think it's way more aligned with our vision and our mission. And I think it's way more respectful of what's going on in the market conditions. And last, tell them you will align no matter what the decision is. Now, here's a critical word. You will align, which is not the same thing as agree. Agreement says, I, Laura, I, Michelle, completely agree with you and I'm going to go forward. Alignment says, I, Laura, I, Michelle, disagree with you, but I will publicly support it with my words. And I will support it with all my behaviors. You have my alignment. I commit to you my alignment. And the reason that's so important to make that distinction, it allows you to have your own integrity. Sometimes people will resist a decision because they feel they're violating their own integrity. Like, I can't do this because I don't agree. And so how could I possibly go out and tell people to do the thing that I disagree with? Well, you're not saying you agree. You're saying you have aligned. You've made a decision to say that person's empowered to make the choice. I have been hired to support that person. I will do so now. With my integrity, I align. Alignment is about behavior, not belief. It's about action, not feeling. So hopefully that helps.
It's a lot to think about.
And you're, like I said, you can review that document. You can download the workbook from Managing Up and Across. And you can also watch the videos. There's videos that will have probably some elements there that I didn't say here. And there's certainly elements of what I just said here that are not there. This is also recorded, so you can always go back to it and watch it again if you need to. Comments, questions about any of it?
I'm just curious to hear from Michelle about how she did this and how it went.
Good question.
Sorry, Michelle. I don't.
I'm still doing it.
Relive hell.
I'm still doing it.
You're still doing it? Okay.
So I mean, it's for me in my world, and I apologize, my camera's not on, not to, but
as well.
For me in my world, I'm trying to take a very small small company that brought me on to be the operations lead and make change where they don't want change. And well, I mean, they want change, but they don't want change, but they don't want to change too fast. And we don't want to upset everybody. And everybody needs to stand around the campfire and sing kumbaya.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just not possible. I mean, all those things are not possible in business. So, and I have two different, I report directly to the owners. And I have both of them are night and day. One is, right, Michelle, that's what we have to do. You go do it. And the other one is, now, Michelle, did you talk to everybody? Did you get everybody's approval? Did you, again, and I'm like, look, guys. So basically it got to where I had to have the conversation, like Shane said, and I told him, I said, look, you brought me here to do a job. I told you when we were coming on that if you wanted me to come in and do this role based on our conversations, that I was going to upset your snow globe. I was going to shake up your snow globe. And you told me that is what we need. Yes. Because I told you, if that's not what you want, then I'm not your girl. I told you that from the day when we started having conversations, right? I said, and now we're in it and you don't want me upsetting your snow globe. So basically I just had to make peace. And I said, look, I'll get done what I can get done. And I will impact change where I can impact change. Outside of that, I'm here. Just let me know. I'll be over here in the corner just waiting. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even right now, I just had an instance come across where, you know, it's very small mindset of we want to grow this company, but we want to still do it the way we did it before.
Right. Okay.
And so it's been, I don't know if I'm explaining myself very well. It's been a growing experience for myself, right? Learning how to validate, learning to understand, like, you're really not, they're not coming from a place of malice, right? But it is truly where one operates, everything's in fear. And because they've been so small, they've been afraid to upset the apple cart, so to speak, because in the area, in the days of when we all went into the office, there wasn't a lot of people that you could just bring on board. It's not that there's not, I mean, I do payroll in HR. I do payroll outsourcing in HR. It's okay. Not so much the knowledge, but there's not a lot of individuals that know the software. They weren't, you know, right, where they could train and they couldn't do certain things. It's not so much the skill as it is everything else that went into it. So we were afraid to upset people because if people left, then we wouldn't be able to. So I'm giving you the whole. So I don't know if I'm really answering your question outside of just. It was a lot of conversation.
Good context. So I guess it's like training for a marathon. You just keep at it.
Pretty much.
I would say that.
Comes more second.
And like Shane said, I had to decide, right? I really had to decide if this is where I want it to be, right? Because the owners were with it. Like they needed to decide what they wanted to do and let the rest of us do whatever. And for me, I just chose that where I am in this moment, in this time, for myself, yes, it's frustrating, but I'm working on my control issues anyways. So it also,
what better place?
Yeah, it's helpful. Yeah. It's like been helpful for me, right? Yeah. It really is, even though because I'm learning that my success doesn't mean I have to, like, I can't complete X because Y is in my way. Well, that's not my fault, right? I had my conversation with Y. I told Y what I needed to do. I've had many, and then I've just had to learn to let it go, where mm-hmm. that would be stressing me. Like, I would be frustrated and I would be stressing over it. And it would be, I have to get it done. You put it down here. You said, this is a task I need to do and I cannot achieve it because you're in my way.
Right.
And I've had to learn. I did what I did. I did what I could. And that's been a huge lesson for me. It's also been a huge lesson to just let it go. So I've had a lot of personal growth and professional growth by staying where I am.
That's cool.
And you know, my, like Shane said, my husband and I decided to just start our own business. But it was getting to the point, I'm like, Sean, I need to start making a decision. Either I'm going to get my resume ready and we're going to put it out there, and we're going to start having, you know, Shane said, landing the plane conversation, so to speak, or I have to do something else. You know, it has met its purpose. October is a year. And I told, you know, I told them, I said, if we're doing the same thing a year later, we're going to be having a different conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of, you know, I gave them a year, and, you know, believe it or not, I have the one owner who is the, you know, leads more by fear and everything else, really saying, he's like, Michelle, this is ridiculous. I'm like, I know, you tell me. I mean, he's been seen, and the more, because they're fighting, even if I show them, well, you know, we really could do this XYZ, would be more efficient, more scalable, more everything else. They're like, no, I'd just rather do this in my pen and paper. And
yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of different things, but as I've stayed the course and just stayed true to myself and everything else, I'm winning the marathon and bringing cheerleaders along the way.
Okay.
So,
yeah, no, that's really helpful for me. Cause I'm a very impatient person.
Oh, yeah, patience is not my virtue.
And I kind of like the military guy who used to be on these calls where he was like, I'm doing all this stuff and nobody's changing.
And that's where I am. I mean, even when, you know, even for the payroll, you know, the team, the individuals that I have direct, they would do things one way. And I would say, you know, if you do it this way, you wouldn't have XYZ. You wouldn't have to spend this time. You went, no. This is how we do it. I know. I'm not telling you have to change. I'm just telling you there's a better way.
Yeah. Well, that's a good
thing. Right. And they're saying to where the other day they're like, Michelle, we need to do this your way. This is ridiculous. I'm like, I know, right? So
yeah. So it's like a lot of it, I guess, is planting a seed. Like you put that out there, like, hey, not saying you got to do it this way, but if you get frustrated with this being this way, let me know, because I know a faster way.
Right.
You know, there'll be a bit of a learning curve, but it'll be less painful in the long run.
Right. And you just put
that out there. And if they decide they want that, great. And if not, that's fine too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's pretty much what I've had to do. I mean, it's not for us. It didn't work with clients. It was just a different way to do it. Yeah, you took the long path, right? You went down the street, you know, through the neighborhood and whatever else, where I already had it done and ready to go. I'm happy to show you, but if you want to keep doing it your way, so be it, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of power in familiarity and ritual. I think is, you know, and of course just the pain of learning a new way is it's painful, it's scary and all that.
Well, and it's not only the new way, it's they as they continue to grow, they need processes, they need procedures, they need things that we're not used to doing, right? We're used to literally, if I get an email about a pay rate change, the HR person wants to know about it, the benefit, I'm like, why? Just and that's like, well, because why? Does it impact you? We have enough information. I don't need to know every time you write a handbook. And personally, I really don't care. But those are the type of it's really changing the whole culture, the whole way, the institution.
Here's the way that you just need to remember this for everybody. When you're not the boss and you're trying to change culture and process and institution, your ability to do so is incredibly limited. So what I've just given you is pretty much every dial there is to make changes. And if you push every dial all the way, you have your answer. You can continue in that. And like Michelle has done, you can continue in that. But the chances of it changing in a time frame that's going to be acceptable is very low. And I love that Michelle has decided to say, I'm going to use this for my growth now. That's a totally valid choice. I think it's a great choice, especially if you can endure under it. It's meaningful endurance. Meaningful endurance is what happens when you're pregnant and you give birth. That's meaningful endurance in pain. Not that I would know, but I imagine, right? Non-meaningful endurance is when you have an injury and you keep walking on it. You know, so I look at Michelle and I go, she's made a decision to develop something, to give birth to something in herself by enduring this for a season. There are others for whom it is a toxic, dangerous environment. And I would say, you're just walking on an injury. Stop walking. You need to get out. So, you know, I think the same is true for you, Laura. I think you need to ask yourself after you've done all the dials. And I would say it's too early to know because you haven't done all the dials. Once you've done the dials, then you can see what the response is. And then you can decide, is this still unbearable, or does it feel meaningful to me somehow? Am I growing something in me that I really need to grow in me? And I gotta cure that part of me so that I have more opportunities in the future. So a key lesson that I remember learning is one of the things that happened in this decision tree that was getting made that I thought was a terrible idea was I was the person on the stage doing all of the speaking and communicating and vision casting and everything in front of thousands of people. And this operator was an executive pastor who was really had no business being in a church. He was a very malice, very manipulative, very political person with not goodwill. And he was behind the scenes pulling all kinds of strings and eventually figured out how to get the senior leader to listen only to him. So he began whispering in the senior leader's ear. And that's what influenced a change where he wanted to be my boss. And he said to me indirectly, which I appreciated, he said, the reason I want to be your boss is I would like to have all the power, but without the target on my back. So you on the stage, you're going to have the target on your back, but I'll have the ability to influence what I need to influence. I was like, Wow, that's just downright devious. And amazing that you're admitting that to my face. Thank you.
Right.
And so how easy was it for me to validate that guy? Not easy at all. I mean, that was just terrible. Right. And so I remember going to this coach. I'm like, this is insane. I can't believe it. And he goes, oh, you know what you need to do? You should subordinate to him. I'm like, subordinate? Are you crazy? He's like, yeah. Go to him and say, hey, look, I'm going to subordinate to you. What do I gain by subordinating to you? I'm like, that's insane. There's no reason that I should do that. And he's like, no, Shane, you've already lost that. It's already happening. Your job is to figure out how to do something that you think is impossible for you to do. And I want you to see what happens when you do. I was like, oh, this is insane. And I'm like, you're right. I have nothing to lose. I've already lost. So I sat down with him. I was like, well, sounds like you got your way. If I subordinate to you, be happy to, but what's in it for me? Which isn't how I think, you know? But he goes, Shane, I think that's a great decision. What you get, if you subordinate to me and you're loyal to me, I have your back no matter what. If you betray me at any point, I will punish you. He said that to my face. And I was like, thank you so much for your honesty. Let's proceed. I'm going to subordinate. And then he became my biggest advocate. And he went to the mat for me repeatedly. And I was like, that dude is evil. How is he doing this? And my coach was like, he's not evil. He just has a different worldview than you. And he's been very transparent and has integrity in his worldview. His worldview, this is a transactional world in which information is power. And he collected that power when you did not because you were naive about it. He played a very, very smart political hand because he understands that this isn't about relationship. It's just a poker match. You walked in not realizing there were rules to poker. In poker, don't ever show your hand. What the heck are you doing? You walked in all naive, like, here's what I'm thinking and feeling. And he went, great, I'll play that hand. Yeah, I got all your chips, man. And I was like, yeah, but that's wrong. And he's like, no, it's only wrong in your worldview. Did he lie to you? No, told you straight. Thank him for that. And then sure enough, gosh, he went to bat for me so many times, had my back left and right, put his neck out multiple times because he's like, you were loyal to me. Now I'm going to be loyal to you. I was like, if I knew that, I would have done that a long time ago. So why do I tell you that story? I tell that story because I was convinced of a certain truth. And nobody could have argued me out of it unless it was this incredibly gifted coach who convinced me that I'd lost everything anyway and I had to do it. Once I did that, from then on, every new situation I was in that I had concluded this person was no good and up to da, 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 I had 9 different ways to deal with it. Because I was like, oh, that's one way to look at it. There could be 10 others. Let me try to inhabit their worldview. What is their worldview? Oh, it's that. Oh, that makes sense. Oh, that would be, that's why he's doing this and she's doing that. And I get this and I'm going to operate in their worldview. Now I'm more powerful because I actually know how to transition into their world. If the world ever changes and now it's my world, he can't operate in my world. So I'm going to work with that. And I'm going to do so generously. I'm not going to do it from a manipulation because that's not my worldview. That's his worldview. But I'm going to enter it and we're going to enter a negotiation and a contract and we're going to keep moving. Sure enough, I've had at least 10 other leaders that I've worked with that I've had to learn to do exactly that.
Okay, so that's the lesson I want next week is how to come up with those 9 different worldviews, how to figure out somebody's worldview.
Yeah, I mean, that we're happy to talk about it next week, but that's a pretty simple one. When you start, you have to ask the question, you got a hypothesis, what do they most want?
Okay, I know.
The first question is, what do they most want? Next question, what do they actually believe? Third question, what do they value? So everybody's a little different. What did he want? He wanted absolute power and control over a system. What did he believe? He believed that relationships were transactional and that information is power and that the one person in the system, the billionaire, was the way for him to get that power. What did he value? Power, loyalty, information, wealth. That's what he valued. Now, as in a church context, that's abhorrent. It's awful.
Right.
But as a neutral observer, are those things inherently wrong? No. They just didn't align with my values. That's all. They didn't align with my beliefs. That's all. They didn't align with what I wanted. I wanted transformation for people. Yeah. I value equality and relationship. I value transparency. I believe that relationships are a give and take, not a contract, not an exchange. I believe that the more you give, the more you receive. That's a completely different belief system, totally different objectives and completely different values. And because I didn't know his before I went in, I never once played poker. He was already there before I got there. And I didn't think to go, hold on, he's been there for a long time. He's been accumulating all kinds of things. And I knew he was up to no good. The moment I met him, I'm like, I don't trust this guy at all. But like, instead of going, I don't trust him, just be like, no, he's a scorpion, not a puppy. Like, scorpions are fine. They're valid. They go, just don't let him in your bed. Don't put a scorpion. You can bring a puppy to bed, but don't bring a scorpion into bed. Scorpions live under little rocks in the dark, and then they eat their meal and they go back. They've been around for 90 million years, and birds eat them, and that's useful for the ecology. So, like, if I just had a neutral observation of like that's what it is and that's its nature, now I can choose how do I relate to this nature instead of insisting that it become a puppy because I'm a puppy. So, like, I'm a golden retriever. You should be a golden retriever too. How come you're not? And they're like, why would I be a golden retriever? That's insane. I'm a scorpion. I got a stinger. I'm like cold-blooded. I got to get out of the heat. Don't ever cuddle with me. I don't cuddle with anybody.
You just described my last boss at my last place of work. We weren't a church, but we were a nonprofit that was supposed to help children, provide shelter for children who were, being sex trafficked. And, it was such a great place. And he didn't care about any of that.
Nope. He just wanted to run a business.
Yeah.
His satisfaction was the effectiveness of a job well done.
I don't even know about that. I think it was just being the CEO, being respected, making a lot of money, Kind of how you described the guy that you're talking about. Very, very, very similar. And he saw me as being insubordinate when I would you know, not immediately jump on board with his ideas, or when I would, you know, disagree with him. And yeah. I didn't even do that much of it. It honestly, it
doesn't
was like,
take much.
It was like, we did not speak the same language at all.
Yes.
Like, transactions just went sideways really fast in yeah. like a mystifying, scary way for me. Yeah.
And what happened with mine is he wasn't my boss even, but it turns out he was without me knowing it. He right. had well, changed it over the course of a year. He had figured out how to become my boss, not in title, but in power. And that was my first lesson in politics. I was like, I hate politics. Politics are so stupid. Blah, blah, blah. And my coach was like, you can hate them all you want, but that's the game that's being played. So why don't you learn how to play it?
Right.
And you learn to play it in a way that is conspiring for good instead of for bad.
Yeah.
You know, it literally is like, it's impersonal, Shane. You walked into up to a casino table that is playing poker. And you wanted to play go fish.
Yeah.
That's not the game that's being played. And it's just a game. That's all it is. So play the game. Are you lying when you bluff? No, you're playing according to the rules of the game. You know, it's a game. Nobody takes it personally. People understand that's what it is. Because I'm like bluffing. I no, that's lying. And that's not being transparent. And I'm not being forthright. And I'm like, yeah, go right ahead. Watch yourself get eaten alive. See your chips go away. And then you're out of the game. I was like, okay, fine. I'll play the game. This is stupid. But I learned to appreciate it and respect it. I really did.
Oh, that's cool.
And I learned how to coach others, how to respect it and appreciate it and understand it. Because ultimately what comes down to is your motive and intention. And if you've got a good motive and you have a kind heart and you mean well, then make use of those skills, because those skills will serve your agenda powerfully.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
All right.
I have to go.
Good enough for now. Thanks, everybody.
Yes, thank you so much.
You bet. Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
We'll talk next week.
All right.
Bye. Have a great week.
Bye, everybody.